Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Welcome to The Worst Idea of All Time, Season 4, Episode 15. I want to cut my head off.
Hiya, Tim. How are you?
Bad.
Oh, that's a shame. What could have possibly brought on this lousy mood?
This is our show, so we get to decide whatever the fuck we want to do. And the rules are that we've got to watch the movie. But the rule is not that we have to talk about the movie. So I don't want to talk about the movie. I'm done with it. I don't want to talk about it.
Do you want to talk about the viewing experience you've had? So for context, once again, we're apart. I'm in Los Angeles, California. Tim, presumably Grey Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a midday screening, if my understanding of time is correct.
Sort of, yeah. It's midday now.
Sort of, yeah. You know, it broke up the middle of your day.
How about you?
Interesting, isn't it?
Because run me through it. What was your viewing experience? Sorry to interrupt you. What's interesting?
Well, it's just interesting. We're both experimenting with different times to watch the movie, and it seems to me, Tim, that this movie is consistently bad across most times during the day. And I'd say this is probably true for most, you know, not just films, but bits of art, wherein, you know, because in terms of mood and thought processes as a person, you know, you can be quite different late at night from how you are in the morning. And you'd think that there'd be you'd think there'd be some sort of carryover of that where, you know, you could watch a movie in a certain mood and find it enjoyable. But it's, you know, this wily film is proving it's very difficult to pin down a time whereby, you know, it's this infuriating experience suddenly becomes enjoyable. I watched it first thing this morning. I have recently traveled from Bangalore, India, to Los Angeles, America, and jet lag had me up at Sparrows this morning, 6:15, and I knew I had the podcast hanging over me today, so I thought, what better way to kick things off and use this time than with a screening. And it was bad. You know, I'm not going to lie to you, Tim. I didn't enjoy it. The thing is...
Yeah, tell me what the thing is.
It's a really long movie.
Yeah.
And
we've done this dance, haven't we? Just to fill everyone in on the timeline of how things have transpired, when we're recording this, we've only just announced to the public that we're doing this. And the people who are very familiar with the project are expressing a lot of concern. And one note that keeps coming back is, were you guys aware that this movie is actually slightly longer than the second one? Which I confess I did not know.
I knew that they were in the same family in terms of length or runtime. But this doesn't just seem to be longer by minutes. This movie, when you're watching it, seems to last for all of linear time.
Yeah. Have you just forgotten, though, do you think, the feeling of when we were watching Sex and the City 2?
I have no axe to grind against Sex and the City 2 at this point in time, Tim. I feel like, you know, I whittled the blade of that axe all the way down to the wood, to the handle, and it was just a sort of, you know, a stick. I think I have forgotten, but when you're in the middle of it, you know, like when Carrie and Big are on the phone and she's talking him down when he's freaking out the night of the wedding.
Yeah.
I was just so like inconsolable in the knowledge. It's like, because I was like, in my head, man. I was like, that was actually a pretty good speech. And I've thought that before. I thought Carrie does a good job of talking him down from the ledge there.
She does.
It's like, but
she
there's does. So, oh, there's just so much to go through for the same.
I'm yawning just thinking about it. Just
for
that moment.
What is the same outcome as if they'd just managed to get married in the first place?
What is it about this particular viewing just fucking knocked my socks off in a bad way? Like, and whatever the negative version of that is, it was astounding.
Strapped your socks on. Taped your socks down.
I fucked with my socks, man, in a big way.
Yeah.
My viewing experience, if I may, just to bloody fill in the seconds. I had to get a bit creative because I recently, as you know, smashed my cell phone. Probably actually only as Guy knows. This was during Till Death Do Us Blart, which is our eternal podcast, which we do with the McElroy brothers. Look, there's no getting around it. We do this to ourselves. There's no one else to blame. But anyway, I broke my phone watching Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, which is a funny sentence. I dropped it while watching it on the can.
Tim was shaking with laughter.
Yeah, that would have been surely it. It dropped like, this is what I can't get over, modern phones. I got a pretty new Samsung, dropped it from a height of less than a meter onto a wooden floor. And it has a case on it, and it still smashed the screen. It's like, fuck, for real? Really? And I've got, I didn't realize, but I've been paying for insurance on this fucker through my telecommunications provider, and it still cost me $200 on top of the insurance just to get the screen fixed. It's bloody bullshit. But anyway, so what's happened is I've had a loan fight.
Hey, Tim, can I just say... Yeah. I really enjoyed your gripes with the state of technology and the cost of fixing smartphones.
This is going somewhere. So I've had a loan phone while that one's been in the shop, and I didn't really have to load any apps onto it because I was like, oh, I'll get the other one back. But the one thing I do desperately need to make sure I have on me at all times is Sex and the City. So I loaded that onto the phone, and I got our times wrong for the record today. So I ended up watching a lot of it like on the bus on the way out there and then in an Uber. And it was quite a juggling act to do the Ubering because I sort of had to like order it on the old phone at the last minute just before I factory reset it to get the new phone.
Are you embarrassed when you're watching?
Yes.
Yeah, I get embarrassed too.
I turn the screen brightness down. Specifically so other people can't see it.
It's so stupid. Like, who cares, you know? If you watch other bad content on your, phone or a device in public, do you hide that? If you're reading a bad book, do you hide the cover?
Oh, boy. If I'm reading a book in public, I will let everyone know about it. It doesn't matter what the book. I'll just be like, look at me. I'm reading a book.
Yeah, that's true. You treat books like microphones when you're out on the street. As soon as you're carrying one, you're like, that's right, everybody. Watch out. Excuse me. Is this door wide enough for my intellect to fit through? Because it is a wide berth.
I've recently gotten back into books, but I'm Kindle through and through. I read on my tablet.
There's a delightful anonymity.
Books are so much better. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, could be anything. Could be 50 Shades of Grey or, a physics textbook. Probably not a physics textbook, though. Any book is better than Sex
and the
City.
Also, probably
not
50 Shades of Grey.
Why not?
And that is untrue, Tim. There are books that are worse than Sex and the City.
Name two.
Sex and the City, the movie, the book, an adapted text.
There's no way that's real. There's no way.
I feel like all movies get turned into books now, and vice versa.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's where, vice versa. They've run out of ideas in Hollywood, so every single book that is written becomes a film, and every film that is written that is successful does retroactively become a book.
Everything's just circulating.
That's bullshit, man, because some things lend themselves to a specific medium, you know?
Oh, yeah, but, you know, anything can be done well in a new medium.
So. Nah, not true. So, you know, there's some book, and don't ask me to name one. For the love of God, don't ask me to name one. But there's some books that just should be left as books, even novels, like fiction books. Just leave it out. There's no need to make it a film.
Everything can be filmed and edited and put on a screen now, Tim. What is your fucking beef with the advancement of technology? I don't want to labor through a book. It's humiliating. Anytime I see someone reading a book in public, I smash it out of their hands and I put a smartphone in their hands and I go, get it to fucking gether.
Wouldn't it be funny to buy a ton of like cheap Android tablets just to have a stash of them in your pack and walk around anyone who's reading a book to sort your fucking life out, just throw the book away and give them a tablet?
I'm telling you, this is what I do.
What are you fucking doing? It's 2018, you time traveling son of a bitch. Get this in ya. There's YouTube now, Tim, you crazy kook.
Tim, if people didn't read books, then they wouldn't be able to come up with such inspiring sentences as, with my mind prenuptially preoccupied, I became delinquent with my library books. So now the tragic love stories of Wuthering Heights and Love Story were going to cost me more than a few tears.
Did you memorize it or did you write it down this week?
Carrie Bradshaw, 2008. You'll never know.
That is still my most hated line in the film. Not my most hated moment, but definitely my most hated line.
It's what gets me. It is an annoying line because it's like needlessly wordy, which can be fun if deployed correctly, but is not in this instance.
Yes.
Where she says, "What the tragic love stories of Wuthering Heights and Love Story." Like, there are so many romance novels that don't involve you repeating the same two words.
Yes. Exactly.
It's madness.
You got it, man. It is, yeah. Of all the books in all the world that you could have picked, and I know that you want to pick famous ones, but fuck me. Pick something else that's not Love Story. You've just said it. Oh,
I'm glad they say
so
Wuthering
right.
Heights, though. Don't you love that song by Kate Bush?
It freaks me out. We've talked about this before. It terrifies me.
Is it you? Are you the person who specifically is really...
It scares the shit out of me. It's the only piece of music that I know of.
There it
goes.
It's Kathy. I come home. Cold. Do you know that the New Zealand opera singer Hayley Westenra performed
I went to school with
a cover of that song, that's right, on one of her albums that Mum always used to listen to. I knew that version before the Kate Bush version. And frankly,
how's her version?
It's terrible. I was glad to hear the Kate Bush version. I was glad to hear, you know, dirty it up, muddy it up a bit, have a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
Hayley's so prim and proper.
Yes, she is.
New Zealand songbird, Hayley Westenra.
What's she up
to? I reckon she's living off of the probably hundreds of thousands she earned from her successful singing career.
Man, I don't know about that. I heard this is vicious New Zealand rumor mill shit, but I heard that album that she, the first album she put out, like almost bankrupted the family.
Oh,
just doing all the you know, all the stuff around that production.
Yeah, I hate to hear that.
Yeah, you do, man. You absolutely do. As much as I might not be a fan of Hayley Westenra's music, I wish no ill fate or harm to her or her career for that matter. She's undeniably got a beautiful voice. I need to dabble in other Kate Bush music, I think, because I'm not very familiar with her other back catalogue, which is to say I don't know her other songs. There's at least one that's quite famous, isn't there? There's at least one other big old hit. I'm looking it up. You can hear me click-clacking away. I don't know what it is. Wuthering Heights. is all that comes up on the first page.
I think she sings running up that hill.
How's that
go? And if I could, I'd make a deal with God. Be running up that hill. It's a good song.
Oh.
Placebo covered it, I think, as well. Anyway, look, this is all well and good, but I really want to kick around in the dirt with you, buddy.
No. No. Just stay in here with me.
Tell
stay
me your shining light.
I don't... it was the woman who serves the wine when Carrie and Miranda are having their Valentine's Day dinner.
Do you know what?
Together.
I'm glad you chose her. She's a bit of an unsung hero of the film, isn't she? That scene doesn't make a lot of logical sense. Yeah, I'll never... It's sort of emerging to me as the sandwich sandwich, because it's quite like it's quite a pointed thing, you know. There's quite a lot of elaborate setup with regards to the number of balloons, but this is one of the more emotionally tense and serious scenes. And you know,
What was the sandwich debate all again that we had?
It was someone falls off a camel and
That's right. Charlotte falls off the camel and she says she's just having a little sandwich. That's right. God, we spent a long time discussing whether that qualifies as a joke.
Well, yeah. But like the
guy who's the real fucking idiot, the person who made the movie, wrote the script and got paid handsomely and moved on with their life to another project. Well, these two. Well,
certainly, it's never not been us, Tim. But like the number of balloons, it just feels like, you know, it's like a Chekhov's gun that never goes off. Pikelet King's balloons.
What do you want to have happen to the balloons? Do you want them all to start popping, or
I want them in an out and out comedy scene. Or okay. I don't really want them at all. Like, it's...
Yeah, that's fair, because she doesn't get completely entangled by them, but she does get mildly slowed down as she grabs her coat.
But not
and
in
puts
a funny way, or even in a way that adds to the moment. Mm. You're just like, geez, that's a lot of balloons. But I'm glad you singled out the waitress, because I think that she, you know, she week in, week out, she does what she can for the cast and crew.
There's a lot of great wait staff in this film. The other one, of course, the waitress who comes over to serve Charlotte just before her water breaks, because she sees Mr. Big and has to exit stage left. Whatever happened to Snagglepuss? I didn't see him anymore,
you?
Could
say I'm trapped in a cage, enraged even. I still see him when I look him up on YouTube after I've smoked an unholy amount of weed.
Are you a big Snagglepuss guy? I've never talked to you about Snagglepuss.
From time to time, yeah, I get down with the puss. But I want to say, while I think that the waitress brings a lot of consistency in her performance week in, week out, I kind of found Chris Noweth as Mr. Big to be all over the shop this week.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I didn't know if it was a character decision or something that was going on off camera with Chris, but right from the outset, when they're looking around that first apartment and he says, Carrie looks at the tiny closet and she says, oh, I can see what the divorce was about. And Mr. Big says, I can build you a better closet. But the way he delivered it this week, the words like crawled out of his mouth, you know. Very patchy. He's like, I can build you a better closet. He's like doing a sliced alone sort of thing. And then just by he was running hot and cold, you know. I got the feeling he might have been on drugs or something, but he did not have his shit together. Not at all.
Big's never been a consistent knock it out of the park kind of actor, though.
Yeah, but he's flown under the radar the last couple of weeks, I think.
Right.
And I was all over him like white on rice. And found him to be really up and down.
I agree with you. Something that I noticed this watch as well is At the start of the film, there's an introduction sequence, a montage, as the sort of credits are rolling up with Carrie explaining who everyone is and where they're at. And it sort of shows you where they got to at the end of the TV series. And that montage, beyond anything else, just begs the question, why does this movie exist? Because everyone's been given a pretty good endpoint.
Oh.
And Carrie's going through listing all of that. She's like, look, I got Mr. Big in the end after all the turmoil and years of back and forward. Charlotte, finally, she traveled to China and back to get her child, and her and Harry are very happy with their family. And Miranda, she was into tough love, but now she's stuck with Steve, and they had a baby, and there they live, figuring it out. And Samantha, well, she moved to Los Angeles to pursue her next career goal.
Every single time with that Samantha, but it's always to me Darwin and the Wild Thornberries.
And Samantha, well,
she found us. That's exactly right. It kills me every week.
But yeah, and it's just like I got to the end of it this time, and I was like, yeah. Yeah, I guess we kind of fucking nailed it in the TV show then, guys. I guess there's no reason for any of us to be here, huh? I guess we're pretty cool.
Well, yeah.
They did such a good job of making these characters get to the end of their arc. And then I think that's the annoying thing about these two films. It's like, I think because they got everyone to a pretty good, satisfying place at the end of the TV show, I assume, I didn't watch it, but based on the wrap-up, previously on Sex and the City, they have to break everything and then repair it just for no point to give you a movie.
Absolutely. Really well put. It is so infuriating to watch 2.5 hours of film and for the net result to be like, you know, it's nothing.
We come back literally to step zero where we started. Yeah, and so
the
little
four
has
of
changed,
them
so
having a good time.
Learned.
Like, while yes, Charlotte physically gives, you know, like creates a person and gives birth to another person. Emotionally, she shows or is given no development. Like
she had a family and now she's got a family with one more
all of them,
baby girl.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay. It's like all of them go through some sort of large life event, you know, like Miranda is rocked by Steve cheating on her. Which, by the way, the scene in which he confesses to that is not just today, I think, but in general, some of the best acting in the entire film. And I think
that fucking blows my mind that you say that. I've never liked it. I think he's so like he does. I guess it's good acting, but I just the groveling thing, the like pound pooch, looking up at his eyes with his head tilted down, up and
that's Hollywood.
I don't think it's good acting though. I don't think it's like very intelligent acting. It's just so cartoonish. It's really like on hands and knees.
It sells it for me. And I think that's why I'm always like largely or mostly invested as much as I can be in Miranda and Steve's story. But you know, like there's no net change in their relationship. And then Big and like Carrie, they've already been through every variation of breaking up and getting back together. So like, the emotional impact that can have on her, even if it's a big public jilting, is, you know, it's minimized. Like it's the law of diminishing returns. Like it will never rock her the same way it did the first or the second time, because it's like she's been through it before.
Yeah, so, I guess so. This is quite a you have to say this is a bit of a different thing though.
Oh,
the stakes are
yes,
quite different.
But in the outcome, no. Like it turns out exactly the same. And then Samantha just goes, you know, like, goes back to being Samantha. It's such a long-winded way.
And then for them to have the hubris to do it all again for a second movie as well.
And yeah.
But they break it and then rebuild it and we're like, okay, cool. I guess you put it back together. And then they're like, oh, but wait, like, another movie. It's like, well, hold on. What are you doing this time? It's like, well, we're just going to break it and put it back together again. It's like,
If you think of the series as a finished artwork, it could be a sculpture, say, the first movie's like, we can make this better, and they pull it all apart and then put it back together again, and it looks a bit wonky, and you're like, maybe we shouldn't have done that. And then
it's like that guy, what was that? Did you see that news story? This was about 10 years ago, of a guy who was trying to repair the bit of Renaissance art, and he used the wrong kind of like acetate or whatever and wiped the paint off of this beautiful Fresno painting.
And then he drew the eyes. The plot of Bean disaster movie?
Possibly, but this happened in real life. This was a real thing. I remember because I was working on the radio at the time, and it was one of those classic, like, you know, odd news stories that you gravitate towards, that you're just so hungry for one of those fuckers coming out that's got legs when you're on the radio. And it was like legit, the picture itself of this guy trying to repair the damage he did to this priceless historic artwork was sensational. It was like someone with ballpoint pen trying to like recreate the eyes of one of those great Renaissance paintings.
That is exactly the process, I think, that this has gone through, this film. Like, to me, they have finished something which is whole and complete and, you know,
and art is objective.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
good.
But and beautiful. Exactly. And then twice they just couldn't resist. I mean, and actually, what better analogy than you and I going back to the honeypot, you know?
Yes. Yep.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I don't like self-reflection, but you're right.
Yeah, there's no better time for it.
All right, let's talk about that for a bit, Guy. Just briefly.
Bad idea? What, of us going back to the honeypot?
Season four, bad idea.
Right now I think I can feel that you are in you feel the weight of what we're doing hang heavy around your neck, and you think it's a bad idea. When I watched it this morning, I felt it was a bad idea, but I feel like we're getting somewhere today, as unpleasant as the means of it might be. So I think not necessarily. And at this point, I'd like to say to you, Tim, that I stumbled into something this week which could be of interest to you in the wider Sex and the City, specifically movie universe. And that might be... it falls under the umbrella of the origins of Coffee Guy, and perhaps an understanding as to why Coffee Guy might appear as he does in Sex and the City 2.
Gimme this.
So when Carrie is interviewing St. Louise...
I need this. Whatever you're about to say, I need this. I need backstory. I need lore.
Well,
I need Coffee Guy.
So what do we know about Coffee Guy? Coffee Guy... He needs...
Loves the Java.
He needs to drink a lot of coffee very quickly, and it needs to be seen. You know, it's done in a public and a showboating sort of way, which is like, hey, look, hey, look, everyone, this guy's in a cafe.
Hey, look at me. Yeah. Don't look at me, though.
And
here I go.
In the world of the movie making business, you know, it's sort of like the movie saying, hey, look at this. It's a guy, he's in a cafe, he's drinking coffee. We know how cafes work. We know exactly what happens in cafes. People drink coffee. How quickly? Doesn't matter how quickly. They drink coffee. That's what they do in cafes. In the interview process, when Carrie is interviewing St. Louise, there is a man in the background of frame at the Starbucks or the coffee shop who's sitting at a table by himself, and he shows up on screen no less than 12 times. How many sips of coffee do you think this...
What do you mean?
So he gets given... you know how coffee goes in three frames?
Like they keep going... Sure, they keep going back to a shot where he's like That's over right. the shoulder he's, of
It'd be
of,
listed as a featured extra in the film, you know, if what I see has anything to go by. So we see him 12 times. How many sips of coffee do you think this guy takes?
You tell me. I was going to take a guess, but now I'm scared.
No, take
How many?
A guess.
Four?
Zero.
12?
Zero. Okay.
So he's anti-coffee
we
guy.
We don't see him drinking coffee. We're lucky even to see this guy nibbling at a croissant. So what I think has happened is Mattress Pikelet King has seen this. He's borne the brunt of the feedback from the Java community. They've said, what in fuck's name was that? What sort of representation is that for coffee drinkers? That's not how people are in cafes. You know what? Do you even know what people do in cafes, Mattress? Have you ever been to a cafe?
Calling Mattress Pikelet King by his first name is very funny to me, by the way. Excuse me, Mattress. Listen here.
He goes, yeah, I know what happens in cafes. I know how it goes. And so
do you think Mattress Pikelet King has never been in a cafe before he made the movies?
Absolutely. And I think...
And he's just kind of taking a guess.
He's overcorrected. So in Sex and the City 2, we go from some guy lounging around in a coffee shop who's just like barely, you know, getting by on the crumbs of a croissant. And everyone said, what in fuck's name was that? And he's gone, oh, okay, you want to see how it is in cafes? I'll show you how it is in cafes.
Blammo. Fucking take that, critics. Take that, Robert Ebert.
And everyone,
here's your coffee.
Robert Ebert, brother of Roger. And then so he's put this into Sex and City 2 and everyone's going, well, that's not it either. Like, if there's any reason for Sex and the City 3 to exist, it's for him to have another bite of the apple.
To try and figure out what happens in a cafe.
To try and represent coffee culture.
We should, you and I should make a short film. We've been in cafes before. We should make a short film that is
called We've Been in Cafes Before.
There's no dialogue. It's called We've Been in Cafes Before. And it's just us like, you get the hubbub. So that it's kind of background sound. And it's just shots
I've never
of
heard
what we feel.
Hubbub called a hubbub.
Really? Just that little well, now I don't want to say it again for fear of being mocked. What's another word for it? Just a
no,
little
just
like
say hubbub or as you were saying
hubbub's not how I say it, hubbub. that's how I've always said it. I've said it so rarely. So this is not hubbub. What is it? Hubbub.
Even that's so not just... quite it, but you're in the neighborhood.
You say it.
You are the Mattress Pikelet King of pronouncing hubbub.
Hubbub. Well, it's definitely not hubbub. This is a weird emphasis. You put the emphasis there. Hubbub. It's like shalom or something. It's so weird. Hubbub.
Anyhow, talk to
hubbub.
Me.
Hubbub. Please tweet us through with your thoughts on this hubbub debate as well, or hubbub debate. I don't even know how you would written down communicate which side you're on, but we'd love to hear from you, Guy Mont or Tim_Bat. Fuck, I don't know. What was I talking about? We're going to make a short film, guy, and it's a display, a showcase of what it's like to be in a real cafe. Short film, beautifully shot, maybe even black and white. And we're just going to showcase the finer parts of cafe culture.
That sounds fantastic to me. We'll find out Mattress's address.
Yeah.
We'll send it straight to him. Web or flesh world, as you like to say.
The meat space. That's an established term, by the way. I didn't make that up.
Is that true?
The meat spaces, yeah. Flesh world's, I think, me fucking up trying to remember the meat space. It's like, you know, the online world or the meat space.
I love it.
Mm, it's a goodie. What was your shining light? Did we cover that yet?
No, we haven't. We haven't spoken about
I'd
my
love
shining
to hear
light.
It.
It's a little moment. It's at the rehearsal dinner when Samantha's giving a speech. And she says, you know, it is tradition for the maid of honor to, you know,
share embarrassing stories about the bride.
And everyone sort of, you know, is on tenterhooks. They're leaning in like, whoa. And then Samantha, with perfect timing, says, but lucky for her, we don't kiss and tell. Or, you know,
yeah,
words to that effect. And as she does so, Miranda does sort of a pantomime performance of wiping sweat from her brow and does a very cute little phew, as in like, phew, what a relief.
I've got the movie in front of me. I'm going to bring that moment up so I can watch it as you're speaking.
And it's just nice. It's not. I feel like, I don't think it was scripted. I think that Cynthia Nixon was feeling that particular scene, and it was just a good little ad-lib that really helps build out the world of the movie and the relationship between the four central characters.
That's cute. That's a good little moment you've picked there, guy. Good on you. You're saying it in such glowing terms as if you actually enjoyed the watch this week. That's how good your shining light was. That's how good your performance was in delivering the shining light. You know who was fucking shit? Just because I'm trying to find the time code of the moment you've described. Stanford Blanche, man. I do not get what he's going for in this movie. Like that phone call that he has with Carrie, which got edited out of the original version I was watching from Neon in New Zealand. Didn't make the cut for that streaming service. It's bullshit, man. He's phoning it in with that phone call. Oh, there it was. It's at 41:36 in the version we've got.
Oh, for anyone playing along at home, you fucking weirdo, Tim. I'm so glad that time code's on the record.
Yeah. Well, I've made a decision that for some of the episode like pictures, I'm just going to have what is it called? Like a snapshot from the movie, like a screen grab, so that you can see kind of a moment we're talking about. Won't do it for all of them, but for some of them.
That's very nice.
So it's the art. It's the artwork of this episode.
I agree with your observation, Ree Stanford. And by turn, and I know this is kind of lazy and generic of me to lump Stanford and Anthony together. I mean, this is essentially the origins of their love story. But I'm going to love Anthony. You know, it's a little bit easier for him because he's a more of a sort of loud and flamboyant character. But it felt like this week all of his scenes, all of his lines were delivered with sort of, you know, a real flourish. Like all of his lines are sort of, he's quite exacerbated and his eyebrows are really high. And he's like, it's like stuffing a cream puff through a keyhole, you know, and he stamps
he's
off.
A fun character. He's a very fun character.
You know, or when he observes Samantha's put on weight and he goes, what's with the gut? And everyone looks
at him. Mother of God, what's with the gut?
And everyone goes, you can't say that. And then he goes, well, she's eating something out there.
Yeah, which is not, because every time I hear him say that, I get like it's such a loaded line. I'm like, that is something that your mother said when you were growing up. Like you are channeling your mother right now, and I love it.
Yeah, we have fun.
Feels like a real, all of the kind of Italian, Sicilian characters, like New York Italian characters that I've seen in TV and movies. They, you know, it's quintessential, man. I've seen that character. I've seen that archetype. It's great. And you got that little line from your mother, who's always concerned about making sure everyone's fed. It's great. it's just a, yeah, for all the shit that Stanford's given us this week, or this watch rather, I'm all about Anthony.
That's nice.
God bless.
I'd also like to do the segment that you've introduced, Tim, called Pot Quiz.
Bitch.
Pot Quiz. Now, as well you know, Tim, after yes. Carrie disgustingly utters the line...
colours outside the lines.
But when he... but when he does, he's never colours outside the lines. What does she say?
Well, they're really pressing her to discuss how many times her and Big have sexual intercourse.
I know the context, but what's the exact wording? Bringing, it makes me hell.
I'm bringing the audience with us, mate. They haven't seen the movie 15 times.
No, but so, we've talked about the line at least 15 times true. Already.
So, so she says, I will say this. When Big colours...
He
really... colors inside the lines.
He really stays inside the lines.
Oh, is that? Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, stays inside.
Yeah,
the lines.
Fuck. It's just anyway.
Horrible.
And then, so from that scene,
jizz everywhere, you know, man. Just he on the ceiling. Ugh.
He goes to come back to the house. Mm. She goes to come back to the house, and she gets back to the house, and he's all fucking, you know, God knows what he's been doing. He's all barred up, and you know, flitting between being quite droopy and incredibly energetic in a terrifying way. But as she and the camera, you know, move through the kitchen towards where Big is standing with his shirt disheveled outside while the curtains blow in an absolute gale, and he keeps trying to tuck the top of his erection into his suit pants, there's a
great bit of colour from you, guy.
There's a pot on the stove.
Yeah.
So as we move past the four hobs, I got your classic four hob scenario. Sure. Looks like electric.
Sure.
On the back left hob, there's a pot. And now look, there is a chance that this is where the pot lives. But I've spent enough time in this kitchen now. It's a nice kitchen. I know that there is a storage area for this pot. It okay. doesn't need to be on the hob.
Yeah.
Which suggests to me that Big's been cooking up something in that pot.
He
and
just
God
got home.
Damn, I want to find out what it is. No. He's obviously been home a while.
No, he just got
the house isn't.
He just got in the door.
She just got in the door.
Ah,
he's out. He's got the doors open. He's got a gale blowing through the house.
He's
got a pant-splitting erection.
Oh, okay.
She comes home to him.
I've got it backwards. I thought Carrie was out on the balcony and he comes home. No, you're right. Yeah, yeah. Okay, sorry. So what's the question?
Well, it's the pot quiz, Tim.
Well, this isn't
in the pot?
This isn't the fucking segment. I mean, this is great, but this is a new segment, mate. Don't say this is the segment that you've been doing. This is a different thing. The whole
this
point
is exactly
of,
the same thing.
The point of the
pot... We've been doing pot quiz for weeks.
The whole point of the pop quiz was so that because we are not watching it side by side, it is to keep each other honest, to reference little details to make sure that we're actually tuning in on this movie every watch and you know, eventually picking up all the nuance and minutiae of this movie. But I'll tell you what's in the pot. It's beef stroganoff with a recipe that she garnered from Magda from the old country.
Who, Carrie?
Yeah.
It's Carrie's recipe.
Yes. Well, no, it's Magda's recipe, but Carrie made it.
That means that the pot's been there... And the stroganoff's been in that pot for the entire day.
Exactly.
Which means that the stroganoff has probably gone bad.
No, stroganoff is one of those things. It's like a slow, it's a slow meal, you know? You're a slow cooker.
Yeah, you can keep it on the hob while you're eating.
Beef stroganoff on a low heat for upwards of 12, 14 hours. So go about your business, come home.
No, you don't leave the stove going for the whole day.
Are you calling
it stroganoff?
Stroganoff. This is what makes it Magda's special family recipe, mate. You got to keep it on the element for ages, and you got to make sure here's the secret, guy. You got to make sure it's unattended, so you have to leave because stroganoff never boils.
You don't want your stroganoff to boil in the first place, but part of the recipe is the element of risk or danger.
Yeah.
Is that what you're telling me?
It's like how people say danger's my middle name. The secret ingredient is potential burning down of the house. That's what makes it taste extra good.
Wow. Well, it's nice to know. And it's nice to know that you've been paying attention to the film.
Here's pop quiz, bitch, for you this episode, Guy. What is the color of Miranda's bridesmaid's dress? Miranda.
It's navy, or it's like a royal blue, actually.
Fuck, nailed it without hesitation. Could I ask you another one? Because I wrote down two.
Yeah.
What is the gift that Smith gets Samantha for Christmas?
For Christmas?
This is kind of a hard one because we see it very fleetingly as part of the sort of New Year's Eve montage section of the film. It's just kind of like one little shot that we stay in for a few seconds.
I honestly know that my eyes have lingered on it before, but I need you to tell me. I'm sorry.
It is. That's okay. It's all right. It is a clock with. Does this ring any bells?
Keep talking.
It's like a desk clock, but it's got two clocks. So it's got two time zones, which I assume one for LA and one for New York, one for each coast, so she can keep track of when she can call the gals, and it's a reasonable hour.
That's very sweet.
I mean, I've filled in the rest of it, but it's a dual desk clock.
Yeah, yeah. He's a thoughtful guy. If you, I got a question for you. We should probably wrap up soon.
Yep.
Is the fur is murder lady?
Yes, God, she got me this week.
What sort of dog is she holding?
I don't know if this, because I don't know my dog breeds very well, but is it like a Bichon Frise, like a fluffy white pooch?
No.
Ah, oh, fuck.
Do you want to know?
Or
do you wanna,
is it a?
Do you know what? I'm gonna leave that unresolved.
Can I have one more guest? Give me one more. I've forgotten what they're called, but they're those dogs that look like little gentlemen, and they've got the little beards. What are they called? A schnauzer. Is it a schnauzer?
No, it's not a schnauzer.
Fuck.
I'm going to leave that mystery unresolved, and then next week your class assignment is to go out and come back and tell me.
Okay, fair enough. That was a good question. Do you know the answer, like off the top of your head? I guess you have to, or else you couldn't say I was wrong. Okay, that's good. Hey, also just a heads up that Lin-Manuel Miranda's in the film. In the meat space, he just tweeted us saying, oh, boys, you're going to see a lot of me. I move a couch.
Almost embarrassed to say in 14 unprompted watches, didn't see the guy. But
you would not guess that guy's Lin-Manuel Miranda unless Lin-Manuel says, that's me. And then you look and you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's quite cool.
It's a strong performance. So convincing, you know, in his work as a mover, you'd have absolutely no idea what that guy is working on behind the scenes.
I was my initial reaction when he tweeted is I was like, oh, that's fucking classic Sex in the City. Oh, okay. I got two things I want to say to wrap this up, Guy, because one really made me mad. I was like, this is classic Sex in the City, isn't it? You've got like this incredible artistic talent, a guy who wrote the. Went on to write the most popular musical, of the last probably 20 years in America. And because he's Puerto Rican, they've relegated him to the furniture removal guy.
Well,
fucking
that's
classic.
That's what I feel like every time I'm at a sports game, you know, and I don't get called onto the field. I'm like, classic sports. You got the greatest fucking athlete of our generation sitting in the rafters.
Definitely not even going to.
You're not even going to bring him down onto the field or the court or whatever, you know?
Yep, definitely the same. Definitely the same. The thing, and this will be the final point that I make, when they go to the fucking auction, Carrie's line is, it was a rare event that brought all kinds of New York women together. And you go in there and you're like, are you fucking joking me, Carrie Bradshaw? Everyone is a millionaire to set foot in the building. Yeah. Are you joking me, mate?
That
all
is...
New York women. That fuck you.
Decidedly true. But to try and put a positive spin on that, how great did the costume department do on the extras at that divorce auction? Everyone looks
really good.
Like they're in the right place, you know? It paints a very loud and vivid picture of the specific types of people who are at the auction. I agree with your point that Carrie lives in a, you know, in a bubble, in a fantasy world. But big props to costume for what they pulled off there. Also, shout out to casting, who deployed a British accent very well to enhance the fanciness of the situation. The auctioneer is a Brit. And you're sort of like,
yeah, forgot about that.
Aren't we in good company?
Hey, there was something that I threw at you the other day. I messaged you something. I was listening to something on one of the first episodes, and it was a thread that we didn't
about,
pick up. Was it about Paul?
Coffee guy.
Is that his name? Oh, that's right. Who's credited as Elaine's friend, and then Elaine isn't in the credits of the film.
That's right.
So. I forgot about that. We have got to put our spectacles on and where's Wally, the shit out of coffee guy?
Oh, we've run so long. God damn it. I'll put this
to
you.
48 minutes. You're all good, mate.
Mattress Pikelet might have backdated the IMDb credits so that coffee guy is in the first one. So he's I know about cafes.
Right. This makes perfect sense. You're a detective guy. It's been great to talk to you. It's been so fucking horrible watching the film today. And I can't wait to do it all again real soon with you, my friend.
Man, you are not in a good space. See ya.
Bye.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out. I feel him out. And, we go for it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.